Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
This is the Jeff Blair Show with guest host Joey Vendetta on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
The San Diego Padres are out of their minds. They're just trading for everybody. Justin Upton, Will Myers, the Kemp trade's gone through. Maybe people will show up at that park. San Diego's nice, kind of boring. 1 minute after 10, Joey Vendetta in for Jeff Blair at Radio Vendetta on Twitter. A couple more tweets before we get to Scott Smith, COO of Hockey Canada. At Radio Vendetta, this is from Roy Loheed. Last night was Eastall showcasing skills for trade deadline deal to Montreal. Hashtag trade FNUF. Hashtag no Habs fans, please. Rob Scott. Fans freaking because elite teams already beat Carolina. Carolina has beat LA Kings, Nashville, Dallas, Pittsburgh this year. Relax, it's just one game, just like 9-2 was. Good point. The real Chewy, losing a game like last night's is concerning. Those are games you need to win because at the end of the year, they may matter. Brent McCord, haha, no Joey, I didn't hurt my hand. He said he smashed his radio because of the Rajon Rondo thing I did earlier.
Rajon Rondo.
Chris.
Rajon Rondo.
Chris Lichty says, my wife wouldn't think it possible, but someone has moved me off the Fan 590. You're a miracle worker, Radio Vendetta. Nice. Have a Merry Christmas, Chris. So, Scott Stone, my man, Scott Smith. Excuse me. Scott Stone is a guy I went to high school with. That was a Freudian slip. I think he sold me something illegal, too, in like the 10th grade in the bathroom. Scott, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm fantastic. I'm excited for Canada-Russia. I don't care if it's a preseason game. Canada-Russia, I still go back to when I was a kid, when I was, I don't know how old I was, 1972. When I hear Canada-Russia, my brain goes back to 1972, and I don't know why.
Well, hey, I definitely Canada-Russia brings back great memories, and for many people it's 72, but also think about 2009 in the World Juniors, that great semifinal finish with Eberle scoring the goal with 5 seconds left, and then we won in a shootout, so lots of memories of Canada-Russia.
So, 2005, Sidney Crosby basically helps launch the golden age, they called it, of Canadian junior hockey, right? You ended a 7-year drought, I think it was, and began a stretch of 5 straight titles, right? Pretty high standard. So, Connor McDavid is like 12 years old at the time that Canada last won gold at the junior level. And, you know, McDavid's quoted as saying he's a little annoyed of Canada not winning the gold. So that's, you know, now that he's healthy, that's motivating. You got a pretty great team this year with Darnell Nurse, you know, Lazar getting loaned back, Duclair back, you know, Max Domi, who's been in junior for 4 years. Basically, this is the end of his junior career and his Team Canada career. A lot of motivated players heading into this tournament.
I think everyone's motivated. We're very fortunate that we've got a great group of young players who are even greater young men. We've got a great coaching and team staff. And I think we recognize that, you know, this process starts tonight at the Air Canada Centre with an exhibition matchup against Russia. And we'll take it step by step. But I think there's been some good building to date. And definitely our team will be ready to get this thing going on the 26th of December.
What was the strategy behind picking games for each city? Because this is the only game Canada plays in Toronto for a good stretch. Their games in the U.S. are in Montreal. Why did you guys do that?
Well, we took a different approach this time. We didn't go to an open bid process. We started discussions with both Toronto and Montreal because we had been through the experience of them bidding in the past and coming very close to being awarded the World Juniors. Through our partnership with the Canadian Hockey League, we made a decision that both Toronto and Montreal would be great host cities. It is an ambitious effort. But we thought they'd be great host cities, and we thought that for the first time we would award two events. So, you know, this year Montreal has Canada in the preliminary round, and then we'll move to Toronto for their quarterfinals through the final of the event. And they'll do exactly the opposite in 2017, where Canada will start in the preliminary round in Toronto and then move to Montreal for the playoff round.
And what are ticket sales like in Montreal? Toronto, I know, are doing really well. And I know Montreal wasn't sold out, but it's getting there.
Toronto is essentially sold out. Even the few tickets that we've had where we've had some holds that we've been able to release for public sale have been consumed at a very good pace. Montreal, we're not in a sold out position, but we continue to sell a good number of tickets on a daily basis, and those numbers increase as we get closer to the event. Obviously, that Canada-US matchup on December 31st will be a great game, and it is very close to a sellout as we speak today in Montreal.
So having the drought that Canada has had and coming off that golden age where Canada rolled off five in a row, you know, the past 2 years weren't good enough to even your own director of player personnel, who's quoted as saying that, Ryan Jankowski. But, you know, look, the previous 5 years included two gold medals. They could have gone either way. And Canada needed a shootout to beat the U.S. in overtime to beat Russia and Sweden to make it five. So you were getting bounces, and then, you know, you didn't get bounces. That's kind of how it works. But what's your prognostication, your thoughts on, you know, look, this year's team's headlined by McDavid, who's a generational talent, and Darnell Nurse, who's going to be just a fantastic pro, it looks like. But, you know, Sam Reinhart, number two pick from 2014, as I said, Duclair coming back. You got some big names on this team. The pressure has to be fairly pronounced for these kids.
Well, I think we have to be careful that we don't look too far ahead. I think we've got these three exhibition games tonight in Toronto, Sunday in Ottawa, and Tuesday in Montreal. And I think we just keep moving towards the start of the event on the 26th. There's no question we have some great players. The last 5 years, we haven't been fortunate enough to achieve the results that we wanted. But I can tell you that each and every year, every player who's represented Canada, the national junior team, every staff member who's been there has been committed to making sure that we put our best effort forward. And I think that's where we are today. Yeah, we're disappointed that the results haven't been what we expected in the past few years. But I can tell you when we close an event, we immediately start looking to the next year. January 6th of last year, we started focusing on this 2015 event on home soil. We believe we've got a great staff under the direction of Benoit Grew. We've got a great group of players, and we just need to keep building towards that playoff round come Toronto in early January.
Thank you very much for being on the show, Scott. And if folks want to get tickets, they can go to your website?
Yes, go to hockeycanada.ca and the World Junior section and tickets there. Obviously, there's all the information you need on the championship.
Great to have you on the show. Good luck tonight against Russia. Regardless of exhibition game or not, it's still Canada-Russia, right?
Many thanks.
Thanks a lot. That is Scott Smith, the COO of Hockey Canada, here on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Joey Vendetta in for Jeff Blair, once again at Radio Vendetta on Twitter, if you want to follow or you want to tweet. And we'll turn our attention to the National Football League. We're going to get a call from Jory Mittelstadt, who hosts a program here on the weekends, along with Randall the Handle, one of my favorite names. So let's go through some of these games and some of these scenarios this weekend. But I think Pittsburgh's a lock, an absolute lock over KC. KC's offense is going to have to keep up with the Steelers' offense. They average over 400 yards a game on offense. Now, Pittsburgh hasn't been consistent. They lost to Tampa. I mean, they lose again, trap game. The NFL actually has more trap games than the NHL. The NFL is a trap game league.
It's a trap! It's a trap!
So, Pittsburgh's had over 100 points in the last three games. The offensive line finally healthy. Le'Veon Bell, we know what he can do. But KC, if you don't know this, has a terrible run defense. So I think the key here is if Pittsburgh can establish the run with Le'Veon Bell. And we'll get more details with Jory, who co-hosts The Bottom Line, presented by BetTheGreek.net, which is on Sundays. I listen to them before I watch NFL football, just so I know where I'm going to lay my cash. So he co-hosts it with Randall the Handle, 10 a.m. to 12:30. So if you have a gambling problem or a non-gambling problem, worth listening to. So Steelers, you know, with Antonio Brown and KC, their wide receivers don't catch touchdowns. Think about this. He has more receiving yards, more TDs, and receptions than the entire Kansas City Chief wide receiving core. I'll take the Steelers. They're favored by 3. I'll give the points and take the Steelers. Another big game. This is a big game from the standpoint of who is going to ruin whose season. We already know that the Niners, Jim Harbaugh denying the fact that he's going to Michigan. I say fact because he's going to Michigan. He got offered $49 million. He will be the highest paid coach in college football. More than Nick Saban in Alabama. $49 million to coach. Let's not forget the TV deal that he'll get, right? He'll get a radio show. He'll get a Nike deal. He'll get all kinds of local endorsements. And he'll get to run the show, which at the end of the day is what he wants to do. So what are the Niners playing for here, right? And it's funny, people talking about Kaepernick. Remember Kaepernick? Remember Kaepernick? How good he was before defenses figured him out? Not so good now. Niners imploded. So Niners at Chargers. Niners are 500. Chargers are 8-6. They're completely dysfunctional, right? They released Ray McDonald, alleged sexual assault charges. So San Fran, basically done. You got to take the Chargers. It's in San Diego. Niners can't score in the second half. The Chargers have a lighted up offense. They're in a bit of a rut, but they need the win badly. You got to take the Chargers in this game. And the playoff picture in the NFL still somewhat muddled. But it's amazing that it's just absolutely amazing that the NFC South is allowed to have a team. And you watched the game last night. I couldn't think of which was worse, the Leaf game or the Titans versus the Jaguars. I mean, the Jags won that game 21-13. Whoa. What a horrible game. Just 2-12. Well, now 2-13 and 3-12. But just terrible. So the NFL playoff picture, as I said, is getting a little bit clearer. Still somewhat muddied. So I think we're going to get Jory Mittelstadt on the line here in just a second. But right now, the Pats project as the number one seed. The Broncos are the number two. The Cards, who lost their starting quarterback and had so many injury suspensions on defense, amazing how well their D's played. Jory Mittelstadt on the line now. Jory, how are you?
Hello, Joey. This could get very confusing, Jory. So.
No, it's not going to get confusing.
No?
Okay. No, not at all.
Nice to be with you.
Fantastic to have you on the program. It's 10:15, Jory Mittelstadt on the line, and your show Sunday mornings, the Randall the Handle, 10 a.m. to 12:30 right here on The Fan. As we head into week 16 of the NFL, the second last week of the NFL season. And as I was going through, the Lions are the team that I think is not getting the respect that they deserve. Because, you know, Stafford's a bit of a punk, right? People don't like him. He's just not likable because he doesn't work hard. It's known that he's not a hardworking quarterback. He's not one of those guys that puts in the extra time in the film room, right? The guys like the Russell Wilsons, you know, Tom Brady, say what you want. The reason Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Russell Wilson, why these guys, even Ben Roethlisberger, they put the work in, right? And then there's guys that have all the gifts in the world and they don't put the work in because they don't need to because they're young. And that's the category that Stafford falls into. The Lions are 10-4, projected number 2 seed. But that defense, that defensive line is ferocious. And they play the Bears this week, and you got to think they're going to romp over their Bears, but you never know, right?
Jimmy Clausen. Come on.
Dude, Jimmy Clausen sounds like a character from an 80s sitcom.
And he very well might be. Everything's changed in Detroit this year, and I don't know if you can simply credit Jim Caldwell coming in as head coach. But what I mean by that is this is a team that dined out on outscoring the opposition for the past 3-4 years, and Stafford has put up some really incredible numbers when you look at the yards and the completions. He had over 40 touchdowns a couple years back. And they couldn't stop anybody on defense. Well, now it's all flipped around. The offense has been inconsistent all year. The defense, as you talked about, in that D-line, but even the improvements they've made in the secondary. This team's been winning with defense. But the other big change is this team historically, at least under Jim Schwartz, just killed themselves with not only a lot of penalties, but at the most inopportune times, turnovers when you can't turn the ball over, and an inability to win in December. Prior to this year, and they've won both December games, they didn't win in December for 2 years when they were lined up to make the playoffs. So I think some credit goes to Caldwell for changing the culture a little bit in that they don't seem to beat themselves. But I think it's a little bit curious that the offense has been inconsistent. Yes, they put up some points the last couple of weeks, but look at who they've played, including the Bears, going back to Thanksgiving. The opposition hasn't exactly been strong defenses. So they get a break here because Chicago's defense is horrendous. So, yeah, they should romp. But nothing's always that easy in this league. And maybe the Bears get a bit of a spark by going to Clausen, given the way Cutler's played.
So if you look at the defense on Detroit's side, they've hit opposing quarterbacks 68 times. And one of the storylines is interesting because Jimmy Clausen was actually a teammate of Golden Tate. And Golden Tate, I have to give a lot of credit in Detroit because he's given them a secondary option,
yeah,
and he's become their primary option on a lot of plays, on the slant stuff, on the short inside stuff, and a guy that he doesn't stretch the field, but he definitely stretches it to the middle, and Megatron is who he is, right? He's just one of the best receivers in football. And I think is he the quickest to 10,000, he just recently set a record, right, where he's the quickest in history to, I can't remember if it was catches or yards, whatever the case may be. Look, Ndamukong Suh is going to destroy Jimmy Clausen, okay? Jimmy Clausen is going to be running for his life. I won't be surprised to see Jay Cutler back in the game, because if you look at what happened to Teddy Bridgewater, sacked 8 times earlier this year, yeah, right? Josh McCown sacked 6 times and hit 14 times. So, and again, this is... the Detroit Lions are living up to the name of their team. Their D plays like Lions. And their offense, I got to give credit. You got to give credit to Golden Tate. This is a guy that came in and left Seattle under somewhat dubious circumstances, right? A lot, yeah, of rumors going on what went down in, yeah, Seattle with him and Russell Wilson, yada, yada, yada. And he stepped up and had the best season of his career playing in Detroit.
I'll tell you this. If they didn't have Golden Tate, given the injury troubles that Megatron has had this year, they wouldn't be a 10-win team. He has been the catalyst for that offense. I don't have numbers in front of me, but I remember seeing on one of the games, I want to say last week or the week before, that I think he leads the league in third-down catches that,
yeah,
go for first downs. He has been so clutch for them. And remember, Megatron missed 3 full games and part of a fourth and hasn't been right. Maybe, I think, last week or the week before is the first time he's really been healthy. So his numbers are down this year for obvious reasons. But, yeah, he's been tremendous for that offense. That's where Stafford's been going when he gets in trouble, when he needs to pick up that third and six, that third and eight. He's been the guy that they go to. So you're absolutely right. And I thought Seattle made a mistake in giving up Golden Tate. He was their best receiver. He would still be their best receiver. And as you suggested, he's not a stretch-the-field guy, but you've got that with Calvin Johnson. Mm-hmm. So he's an excellent complement. Look, we always look at things from a betting perspective, and that means you got to factor in the point spread. And right now, Detroit is an 8.5-point favorite on the road in Chicago. And yes, they're 10-4. Yes, they're leading their division at the moment because they still have to play Green Bay to end the season week 17, and that game will likely decide the division. But that's a lot of points, and if you watch the game last week, they struggled to beat Minnesota. In fact, Minnesota kind of handed them that game. So circling back and looking at it from the way we'll look at it, I don't know how anxious I'd be to lay 8.5 with the way that offense has performed. And like I said, there's just the only thing is we know that Chicago's defense is really bad, but what we don't know is what will happen with Clausen going in for Cutler. He can't really be worse than Cutler's been, especially the last month.
Oh no, I disagree. Right? I think he can be worse.
Oh, I don't know about that.
I think he's going to be worse. So I think he's poorly. Unprepared. I think he's a guy who's unprepared. He can run. He can scramble. He's not a scrambling quarterback, from what I remember. He's reasonably mobile.
Yeah,
He's going to get mauled.
Oh, I think he's going to be under pressure all day. But there may be a little bit of a spark there, and I think it's got to be about Matt Forte. Although it's not easy to run against the Lions, again, on the road with Detroit, that's a lot of points to lay, given the way their offense has played this year.
Okay, Seahawks at Cardinals. Marquee matchup, right?
Yep.
Cardinals, they keep paying every week, right? As long odds makers just, they undervalue this team. And yes. I don't blame the odds makers for undervaluing, because when you look at what's happened, you lose your starting quarterback. You got guys on defense that have been suspended, have been injured for the season. They had, you know, on paper, their defense was incredible at the beginning of the year, and you thought that it was going to fall apart, and it absolutely hasn't. Patrick Peterson has been insane in the backfield, in the defensive backfield, and their defense is absolutely great and rises to the occasion when it needs to. So this is the last Sunday night game of the season with the NFC West on the line. University of Phoenix Stadium is going to be rocking, and Seattle is giving away 8 points in this game.
Yeah, that's all because of the quarterback. Have you watched Ryan Lindley? My goodness.
Dude, he looks like David Lindley, the guy who sings the song Mercury Blues that you probably don't remember.
I do remember the name, and I'm trying to put the song in my head, but we'll come back to that. It's all quarterback-driven. Lindley, his numbers are the worst ever for a quarterback that qualifies whatever that minimum number of attempts is. He's got the worst QBR in the history of the league. I don't think he still hasn't thrown a touchdown pass. He started 3 games last year or the year before when they had all kinds of injury problems, and he was 0 touchdowns and 7 or 8 interceptions. He just isn't very good. It's a little surprising that he's not going to the rookie Logan Thomas, although when I say he, head coach Bruce Arians, he has said that there will be a package of plays and we should see him on the field, but the line is solely driven on the fact that they don't really have a quarterback. And that's justified, and the way that Seattle has turned up the heat the last number of weeks. Their defense seems to have its mojo back after it struggled through the first 6 games of the season. You want to talk about pressure. Lindley's going to be under pressure all day. They don't run the ball well in Arizona at all, and Ellington is out for the year, so there's a whole slew of challenges for this Cardinal team. The one thing I may disagree with is Patrick Peterson, who's considered one of the best cover corners in the league. I'm sure you can guess the answer, but the question is, which corner has given up the most touchdown passes this year in the entire NFL?
That's because he's always trying for pick sixes, yeah. Right? He also has pick sixes, right?
Don't get me wrong. I'm not sitting here and telling you he's not a good player. He is. I wouldn't say he's had his best year, but I think the MVP on that defense is Todd Bowles. And Todd Bowles, for people who don't know, is their defensive coordinator. This guy has figured out how and when to blitz like nobody else. This team blitzes on 50% of their defensive plays. 50%. One out of every two plays they blitz. But what he has done is he has figured out where to send the blitz from and when, and it's been so effective. And the other thing that he's done is they are just ball hawks at the end of games. They've got the most forced turnovers in the fourth quarter. This team just knows how to close games. And I say the co-coaches of the year are Bruce Arians and Todd Bowles, because Bowles deserves a lot of credit. What Arians has done with the quarterback situation, with lack of a running game, with Larry Fitzgerald hurt, they just find ways to win games. But I don't see them winning. I think they'll keep it close, at least for a while, but I would expect Seattle to pull away again. It's a lot of points to lay on the road in divisional games.
Oh, yeah.
That means a ton. I lean Arizona, but this is a game I don't think I'll have a strong opinion on Sunday.
And they've got, look, in addition to Patrick Peterson, that defense has Cromartie and Rashad Johnson, all three
who are top 10. And remember, you know, they lost Darnell Dockett for the year.
Yeah.
Tyrann Mathieu's missed the last couple games. They're hoping to get him back maybe next week or for the postseason. It's just been an incredible coaching job, and it shows you how much coaching can matter in the NFL. They are the absolute best example.
2-10-4 teams. We're going to wrap up here in a couple of minutes. Last game that we'll talk about, 2-10-4 teams. Dallas, and I think we're going to have Des Bryant on the show, hopefully before noon. He's supposed to call in. So 10-4 Dallas, 10-4 Colts in Dallas. Dallas by 3. Who do you like in that game?
Well, Joey, I'm not sure if you're familiar, but I'm a lifelong Dallas Cowboy fan.
Okay, take your little cowboy hat off. Get off your little... Hold on a second. We found that song. Not Ryan Lindley. This is David Lindley. The song's called Mercury Blues. You know this song?
Yes, I've heard this song. I'm old enough to know.
Hold on. We're going to keep it going in the background so you can get to the chorus.
I always take off my fan hat when handicapping. Here's the thing on this game. The Cowboy defense is not very good. If you're a Cowboy fan and you think otherwise, you're not being realistic. But what they've done, and I'm sure I'm not telling anything most people out there who follow the league and have watched the Cowboys this year know, they run the ball. They run it better than anybody in the league. And that has meant that their defense has not had to be on the field as much as many around the league. I think they're second in time of possession, and that has been crucial. Last week, they were able to get turnovers out of Mark Sanchez and a beautiful forced fumble. So the formula for the Cowboys, which is pretty good, it's actually a decent matchup with the Colts, is continue to run the ball effectively. Hopefully DeMarco Murray's hand holds up and it doesn't become an issue.
Well, it's his non-carrying hand. I know it's a little bit of it's a less of an issue than it would be if it was his carrying hand.
Right, but they passed him out of the backfield a lot. They love to use him in the screen game. And I was on with Roger talking a little bit last night, pass protection. You need to use your hands. And he's on the field an awful lot. I expect not to see him on third down in obvious passing situations as much as they might, even though they do shuffle him in and out for Dunbar or Randall, usually Dunbar on third down. But
yeah,
I expect to see him less on third down than you normally would because of pass protection, which is so important. So they got to run the ball. They got to win the turnover battle. And generally, they got to get close to 30 points. And what we've seen out of the Indy defense is they're okay against poor quarterbacks and poor offenses, but against the upper echelon, they've been ripped pretty good. So I think this is going to be a relatively high-scoring game, and I think whoever wins the turnover battle is going to win it. And the other thing is the Colts, remember, they've clinched. Yes, they'd like to get a home game, but they lose tiebreakers to Denver and New England. So they need a lot of help, including a win. And they're going to be out there. It's not like they're going to take their foot off the gas. But I think in the back of their minds, they may know that they're pretty much going to be set into that likely number 3 seed. So they'll play the first weekend and get a home game. And I think that does matter. And the Cowboys need the game, because if they finish tied with Philly, they do not win the division. And they're up a game, and they still have Washington in week 17, who beat them early in the year. So for Dallas, everything is still out in front of them, and this is pretty much a must win. Like I said, I think it's flip a coin. Whoever wins the turnover battle wins the game.
Thanks for doing this. At Jory Middle on Twitter. Jory Middle, stat co-host of The Bottom Line, presented by Bet the Greek. Here we go. There's the song.
Oh, yeah. For sure I know this song.
Oh, Joey. Yeah, dude.
Hey, man, it's a pleasure to be with you. I'm a big fan going back many years, you know, Q days. So it was great to talk to you, man.
Yeah, you probably tipped a couple of coolies to this song, huh, bud?
Definitely.
All right. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, Joey.
All right. Jory Middlestadt, and not Joey Middlestadt. See, we didn't even screw that up at all. Co-host, The Bottom Line, presented by BetTheGreek.net. Sundays, 10 a.m. to 12:30. He and Randall the Handle break it down in a fabulously concise and informative way. And if you do have a potential gambling problem, I suggest you listen to them or get help, one or the other. Vendetta, in for Blair. All kinds of movement in Major League Baseball. Just incredible what is going on. Justin Upton getting dealt. He's going to San Diego. They are loading up. It's like an arms race. They may now be the favorite in the division. We'll talk to J.P. Morosi from Fox Sports when we return, also about what's going on in the United States with the relaxed and cooling of the war, the political war with the United States and Cuba, and what that means for baseball. When we return on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Go here, there, and everywhere with Jeff Blair. Subscribe to podcasts of The Jeff Blair Show at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand.
Hey, it's Matt Wieters of the Baltimore Orioles, and you're listening to Joey Vendetta on Sportsnet Radio, The Fan 590.
Minutes in front of 11 o'clock. Vendetta in for Blair. If you're heading out today, -3 feels like -10. Get down about -5 tonight. Sunday above zero, then Monday 4, Tuesday 5, some showers. And then on Christmas, it looks like it's going to snow. John Morosi on the line with us. Thank you for doing this, John, and congratulations. Buona fortuna to your second child you just had recently, right?
Grazie mille, Joey. Yes, on Monday we had our second daughter, Elena Grace Morosi, was born Monday morning. So it's been great. Big sister Gabriella is doing well. She's with me right now. So everything is it's been a great week here at the Morosi household. A bit tiring, Joey, but very, very blessed, and we're very excited.
At John Morosi on Twitter if you want to follow him. So how about the Padres? What are they doing? It's out of control. Have they now become the favorite in their division?
You know, Joey, it's incredible. They obviously are extremely active this week above all. I mean, I feel as though they've been announcing another trade every 8 or 10 minutes. And their GM, A.J. Preller, it's important to note, he came from Texas. He was there when they built those World Series teams. He's an extremely energetic guy who, by reputation, sleeps about 3 hours a night. And I think we're seeing the fruits of that labor right now, because he obviously is rebuilding this outfield in a very aggressive fashion with Kemp and Myers, perhaps Upton, all these different moves. And obviously this team is going to look very different, drastically different, when they report to spring training than they did just last year. So A.J. Preller, in only not even a year on the job, is putting a huge stamp on this team. And your question about if they're going to be the favorite, you'd have to put them in that class, because entering the offseason, there were some people that thought, you know what, maybe they were going to trade some of their young pitching, the likes of Tyson Ross or Ian Kennedy, who is nearing free agency. And the reality is they want to keep the guys they've got. They want to go for this. And it looks like they may be able to field an entirely different outfield than what they did just last year.
And San Diego picks up Derek Norris. I mean, what's going on with Oakland making all these, just dumping guys? I mean, you know, trading guys to the Jays. Billy Beane making moves, loses his lieutenant.
Yeah, I think, Joey, on a certain level, the A's are in a spot where they can never be in one position or the other. They always want to be either going for it completely or in somewhat of a rebuilding role, and I think that's where they're at right now, obviously, with all these moves. It appears there is no end in sight to the number of trades they've made, and Derek Norris is just the latest one going to San Diego. It looks to me, Joey, that they're going to, I think, have a tough time competing in that division for at least this coming season. Now, we've seen it before, where the offseason when they traded Gio Gonzalez and Andrew Bailey and that group, they were able to then win the division that following year. But I just think this teardown is so complete, so drastic, they're going to have a hard time competing in that division at a time when the Mariners appear to be on the rise and the Angels have a pretty good ball club as well. So it's really surprising. I mean, it's surprising that it's not. I mean, surprising that they were so much all in this past year. But then again, this is just the way Billy Beane does business. And it appears he's going to take this thing all the way to the end and trade basically just about anybody for whom he gets a decent offer.
I mean, trades is, you know, Josh Donaldson to Toronto, which was a shocker, but Norris is only 25 years old, right? Hits 270 with not a lot of power, but only played 127 games. And it's just incredible. Like, look, Oakland has depth at catcher with Jaso and Vaught. So the roster still has capable catchers, but Billy Beane, as you said, it's either feast or famine there.
Right. And this is obviously they're in a situation where maybe the A's and the Rays are probably the two teams that still are somewhat governed by their murky stadium situation and that are suffering on a certain level by the fact they don't have a new ballpark and so their payroll is a bit lower than it should be otherwise from a market standpoint. So I think that's where the A's are right now. They're having to make these moves, and they're realizing that there's no new ballpark on the horizon there, just like is the case for Tampa, which is why we've seen similar type trades by the Rays for this entire offseason, including Hellickson, obviously, earlier this offseason, Joyce, Myers today. So it's a parallel situation. Two teams that have been competitive with limited resources. Obviously, this is just the natural and necessary phase they're in. Once they're not really going for it 100%, they have to rebuild in this fashion. I think that's what we're seeing both teams do.
Okay, Obama has now become friends with Cuba, or on the way to becoming friends with Cuba. And you've got guys like Tony Oliva who still go there and have most of his family's there, guy who won three batting titles. But you wrote a column on what this means for baseball. And I said the other day that I thought most of the Cuban baseball talent, the big name talent, the heavyweight Cuban guys, and I love Cuban baseball players because they are so flamboyant and they're just guys with, I don't know, charisma. And we had Wilner on, I think it was Wilner that said yesterday that when they're remote stoppers, actually it was Kevin Barker, they're remote stoppers, which I thought was a great quote, right? When you're watching something and you're flipping channels and you get to a Cuban baseball player on the field, you stop because they are just so incredibly charismatic and they're difference makers. Do you think we're going to see more of an infusion of Cuban baseball players in Major League Baseball now because of this?
Well, there's a lot of things going on here, Joey. I think first and foremost, I agree with Kevin to the extent that when you think about last season, probably the greatest play we saw, period, was the Cespedes throw from left field at the ballpark in Anaheim to cut down the runner at the plate, which was just sensational. So I think he's right about that. I think what we're going to see now going forward is a few things. Number one, MLB is going to want to, on some level, seize upon this diplomatic opportunity that's existing now between the countries to perhaps get a bit more order and a bit more access and also potentially a bit more cost certainty in dealing with the Cuban market. Now, of course, we know the process by which Cuban players leave is very illegal and shady business, the whole human trafficking aspect. I think obviously everybody wants to get that out of here and to have it be a fair and safe way for the players to access Major League Baseball. And you wonder if at some point in time this could be going in the direction of a posting system similar to what you see in Japan. MLB's dream, Joey, would be something along the lines of an international draft like what we have in hockey. But I think that may be a bit far off. I mean, there's been talk about that in the next CBA. The current CBA ends in 2016, so we're still a little bit of time away from that. But I think what this does, this diplomatic relationship, is at least put some basis on the ground in order to maybe have that discussion going forward about getting a bit more order to it. And on the flip side, the Cuban Federation, Joey, can benefit by having the likes of Puig and Abreu and Cespedes, Tomas, Castillo, these guys come back and play for the national team in international play, which means a great deal to the Cuban country, Cuban culture. They were a dominant international powerhouse for so long, but not so much recently because their players have left, and because of the current state of diplomatic affairs, they're not able to go back and represent their home country as Jose Reyes and Hanley Ramirez were, and Robinson Cano for the Dominican Republic in the last WBC, and indeed for all players. So Ichiro Suzuki's been able to represent his home country. So that is the step that has to be taken by the Cuban government and Major League Baseball in the U.S., and I think that is one of the carrots that's in this for Cuba to get this agreement in place, because then there can be some level of reciprocity, and sort of all parties can benefit by an arrangement being worked out.
Okay, in addition to the you know, look, Aroldis Chapman, Jose Abreu, you go down the list of these guys, Yasiel Puig, you know, you talk about the throw from the outfield. You know, Puig has made his share of those direct throws to home plate. You know, Yasmani Grandal, Yunel Escobar, the list goes on and on. Outside of the current crop of Major League Baseball players from Cuba, which I think is like 22 or 23 current baseball players from Cuba, is there an influx from the standpoint, are we missing 10, 15, 20 guys that could play in Major League Baseball that just didn't want to get out? Or do you think that the Major League Baseball quality players from Cuba were pretty much tapped out?
I think it's more the former, Joey. I think there's a lot of players still left there. And when you look at the big picture, I mean, the biggest guy right now is a young shortstop by the name of Yoan Moncada, and he is currently in Guatemala awaiting his ability to get to the U.S. So there are young players ready to go. I do think the Cuban League, which there is called Serie Nacional, that league is probably not as good as it used to be, because a lot of the pro-level players, if you will, it's still considered amateur baseball in Cuba, but the pro-level players, the pro-age players, let's say, a lot of those best guys that you mentioned are already here. But that next group of players down, that developmental system, I would say, is very similar to what you would find in the Dominican Republic. And the difference is, in Cuba, there's a bit more order to the developmental process in terms of the way that those young players are identified and tracked with different camps and sports academies they have in Cuba. It's a more organized system than what you see in the Dominican Republic. Also, the population in Cuba is slightly larger than that of the Dominican Republic as well. So when you really add it up in totality, you talk to people and they would probably tell you, agents and different executives, whether it's in 5 years or 10 years or 20 years, if the embargo ended today and everything was completely open up from a trade standpoint, just as it currently exists between the U.S. and Canada and the Dominican Republic, let's say, then within 5 or 10 years or 20 years, you may very well have the same number of players from Cuba in Major League Baseball that you do right now from the Dominican Republic. That's how rich the talent base is. And again, the population and the scale, I mean, it is the national game there, just as it is in Dominican. So the players are there. I would almost compare it, again, I think hockey went through this when the Soviet Union collapsed. And I think all those stories you heard about defections from the Czech Republic and the Soviet Union back in that era 20, 30 years ago, that's basically, potentially, if things thaw out here, what's about to happen now in baseball. And I think we could see whether it's going to top the number of Dominican players in the next 5 years. I'm not sure, but I think certainly it could be equivalent at some point in time. Right now, it's the league is, roughly speaking, Joey, 70% American and basically 30% international. But I think if Cuba opens up and it becomes fully globalized in that standpoint and Cuba is open, I think we could certainly see a time in the not-too-distant future where it's maybe 60% American and 40% international, or maybe even 55-45. It could be that much, because there is that much talent still developing in Cuba.
John, thanks for doing this. Congratulations on your daughter. And I know that you don't have a pension like Bud Selig at $6 million a year, but I'm sure that you'll have a lot of money to throw around this Christmas. Have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Sounds great, Joey. Great talking to you. Buon anno e buona festa.
All right. John Morosi from Fox Sports. Always great to have him on the show. Vendetta in for Blair. We'll come back and we will chat Raptors tonight in Detroit. The one thing the Pistons do well is block shots. They don't do much else well, and you got to figure the Raptors are going to win this game tonight going away, but that's why they play the games. We'll talk Raptors when we return on Sportsnet 590, The Fan with Eric Smith.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590, The Fan on demand.